on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
Wally.
Barrier going through. Fairbrother, yes! But there was a lot of pushing and shoving claimed by Harris, but I don't think it was any unfair pushing and shoving. Fairbrother has scored. He and Barrier were there together, and it's 3-2 draw.
For it. Well, does its job. Dean Cox again. This time he's in. At the second time of asking, Dean Cox takes Leighton Orient a step closer to Wembley.
Carroll. Jonathan Tahue. Capable of anything. Tahue! Equaliser for Leighton Orient.
We're not a city. We're not a town. We're the only one of us around, and you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're like an Orient from E10. Like an Orient from E10.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Orient Hour. My name's Richard Priest. I'm joined in the studio today by Darren Burrows and Tony Smith. How are you, chaps?
Wonderful. Couldn't be better.
Darren, how are you, mate? Well, I would say that we've got a lot to talk about today. We've got two games to talk about, transfer window to talk about, Wellens Gate, if you want to call it that, to talk about. So there's plenty of things for us to get through. Let's start last Saturday. Carlisle. 3-2, I should have been more right.
The Carlisle manager has always struck me as a reasonable man, which you don't always get in football. The first thing he did in his interview was say that the scoreline did flatter Carlisle quite a lot, and it was, you know, it was a deflected clearance, and a 95th minute penalty was the Carlisle's contribution to the score sheet. But we managed to stick in a couple of the other end. We did have a worrying 20 minutes there in the first half. We thought, oh no, is everything going to go the wrong way? But in the end, it went right, and well played everyone.
I mean, what did you think before the game? Because, you know, I saw, you know, Moncur back in the team, which for me was a bit of a surprise. I've got to be honest, when I saw it, I did think, I'm not sure about his selection really here. I was a little bit concerned because I thought, you know, I feel like it's a little step backwards maybe when sometimes with Moncur. But I mean, fair play, he played very well, I thought, in the end. But yeah, I mean, Sweeney out as well, not even in the squad.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of us thought that with that gap there, they would have pushed Galbraith up and maybe put in someone else at fullback. But like you say, Moncur came in, did a great job, and yeah. Hopefully he's turned over a new leaf for us.
Darren?
We don't know what he's doing in training, do we?
So I'm not sure. Darren, try to have a microphone. That's technical difficulties there. Might want to move your chair along.
We don't know what he's doing in training, do we? So if Moncur's training well and he's putting in a shift, then I think we were a bit light with Sanders, the injury there. So I suppose we shouldn't have been that surprised to see him back. I agree with you. I thought we played well. I thought we had a good game. I think my worry with Moncur is we saw one last night where they Shad tried to play him through. He hasn't got the legs. And the settlement of the team, I think, is huge at the moment.
Yeah.
So if he stays in the team over Sanders, I'll be surprised, if I'm honest. So, but good to see him back playing and good to see him involved.
Yeah, I mean, I say, as you mentioned, yeah, we'll talk about last night's game shortly, but I thought, you know, he played quite well last night as well. You know, for me, it was Tom James came back in. I wasn't sure at the time, again, whether that would have been the right thing to do, because Sweeney, I've mentioned this a few times, he's one of these players for me that has to be playing to stay sort of fit and looking good. You know, if he misses a game, then I think he sort of struggles the next time he's in, and he needs to be playing. Like, so last season was a classic example. He was playing every week, and he was brilliant in the end. But, you know, sometimes I feel that, you know, it's not being the squad as well. I thought it was a bit harsh, really, a bit unbalanced for the team, maybe.
I think if you look at it head-to-head, if it's between Tom Jones and Sweeney to get a game, you've got to go with James, because he's got other aspects of his game that he adds to the whole team. You look at the you look at his ability to shoot from outside the box, you look at the long throws, and you look at the pass for the goal last night. But, you know, I'm a Sweeney fan as well. I don't think it should be necessarily just one or the other. see how it goes. It's good to have good players not in the team always, isn't it?
Yeah, and three goals, obviously. Shaq Ford, what can we say there? He was great, yeah.
Eight, is it on nine for the season now?
I think it's eight, I think, yeah.
The switch out wide. I think the thing with Shaq is it's just a shame he's not ours, isn't it?
I mean, Matt Poulter mentioned to us a couple of weeks ago, didn't he, like, just how pleased everyone is with him because, you know, he sort of came in and I don't think too much was expected. And to be fair, when you think of the games where he was playing through the centre, I mean, he did still score two or three goals, actually. But, you know, he was sort of drifting in and out. He was coming on as a late sub and grabbing something. And that switched to the right. I mean, you know, Matt said to us that you know, they'd kind of mentioned to him, you know, he's... other than centre forward, would you feel comfortable anywhere else? And he said he'd never really played anywhere else, maybe sort of midfield, which was never going to happen playing for us. But, you know, that push out to the right, I mean, it's one of these occasions I could actually see that being his new position for himself going forwards.
Yeah, I concur with that. I think it's been a fantastic switch, and from the lad's point of view, yeah, why not? Why would he want to change up when he's playing that well in that position?
He stopped getting caught offside all the time, which is another thing I've noticed when he's gone.
Yeah, Watford must be over the moon. This is when you loan a young player out. This is what you're hoping for, I guess, right? I mean, I don't know what his contract situation is, but you know, one of the things I was reading something the other day, and people were saying, you know, why are we always getting loans? I've always been a fan of the loan market because, you know, what it does is it, as well as, you know, you're getting a player from a higher level a lot of the time and a youngster that's keen and wants to put a show. I mean, it doesn't always work. We certainly know that in our position, what we've seen. But, you know, that player, like El Mizuni, he wanted to come back to us. If he was out of contract at the end of the season, I know he's got there's an option, so he's not. But, you know, we'd probably be high on his list if he just wanted to sign somewhere and enjoy his football. And that's another advantage to the loan market, I feel.
I think the finances of the loan market are also important to any club at this level. If you've got people you can ship in and out and not have to give them contracts, then it's a lot easier to balance the books, even though we're failing to do it quite comprehensively at the moment. But I think that's in favour of loans as well.
Yeah, and Matt Poulter said to us the other week, didn't he, that what Shaq as well, we're really not having to contribute that much, really, compared to what loan deals can be like. So, yeah, it's just a win-win.
I'd certainly like to see one or two less reliance on it, if I'm brutally honest with you. Particularly remember Tranmere being top years ago in the old second division, or fourth division, sorry. And they came down with the Christmas decorations because they had five loanies and something like three or four of them were called back by their parent clubs and shipped off to the clubs in the next league. And obviously, we haven't got that problem. We're in League One.
That's the danger, I suppose, isn't it? That's
my only slight concern with it. I was a little bit nervous, and it was nice when we had Matt on, and Matt said about Seoul and Shad. And also a little bit me still... still likes to see players from our own youth team, but we were using the loan market brilliantly, let's be honest. So,
Tony, a goal for Real Soteriro as well.
It's nice to see. He did well in the last season. People have forgotten that it was his goals that essentially got us there in the end, so it was good to see him up top again. And it was good. He didn't really get much of a touch first, though. If you mentioned his interview afterwards, it was mainly running after the ball, but took his chance, took his spot and took his chance well in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, we said this, or I mentioned this to you guys just before we came on air, that, you know, I'm not going to... We'll move on to Tuesday shortly, but Carlisle were the worst team I'd seen this season up to that point. I mean, I thought Reading were poor when we played them at home, but Carlisle, I mean, I think that's the frustration. It was 3-2, because, I mean, it should have been a 5-5 sort of nil game, really, for me. And I just thought Carlisle offered nothing for me.
They looked like... I mean, there was a lot of people there who were asking each other what their name was, and when they went out there and convinced that... they didn't know each other, did they? They've all been shipped in from elsewhere for the day, so they may get better. But
yeah, Darren, I mean, they were well backed. I mean, they it was 800.
They're always
fans.
Well backed. Yeah. And I've started to get a strange soft spot for them. I think it's because we beat them all the time. But the one thing I sort of found fault with them was they got a massive leg up with a goal, didn't they? And they just had no confidence to build on it. And that was the thing that really stood out for me, the individually and collectively. They weren't confident. And their manager, I do like Simpson.
Yeah, he's very honest, isn't he?
Yeah,
his
interviews were spot on again, and he said about our game management. Yeah. And again, I think that's where one of the areas the club have improved so much. We were never good at that kind of thing. You know, players taking yellers when they need to. And that's what Richie's installed and long may continue.
I think, was it our third goal? That's what Simpson said, didn't he? He said, like, yeah, we should have taken them down. That's, you know, that's the part of the game we're not doing. Just take one for the team. That's it, yeah.
It is a confidence thing as well. I can remember in front of me in the East Stand, I think it was Mellish, the 22. He could have kept a ball on and played at one point in the first half and they were 1-0 up. He let it roll out for a throw-in, like they were almost playing for time after half an hour. So confidence is a hell of a thing for any football team. They certainly haven't got much.
But he's one of their better players, Tony, isn't he? I agree with you.
Yeah, and I suppose the fact that we kind of sort of, I think it was before we knew that it was Carlisle as well that was supposed to have taken Drinnen on, who they were the ones who, I think it was said, isn't it, that Martin Ling said it in his interview on the Friday or Thursday or Friday after the transfer window, that Carlisle were the ones who'd taken Drinnen on trial. I mean, we'd all heard these rumours anyway, but they, because of his injury...
Well, Simpson apologised to us in his interview.
Did he mention it? I listened to his interview.
He didn't mention Drinnen.
Oh, right, yeah.
But
oh, right, really? Maybe I just completely missed that then. What did he say there?
I'm sure he said something about apologised to Leighton Orient or the club.
No, because he's an ex-teammate, isn't he, of Richie Wellen, so I'm part of that.
I'm sure he said something. I might be wrong. I might have to re-listen to it.
I think it was medical history, wasn't it?
I mean,
it was the excuse that was given in the end, whether it was something else.
So, you know, I thought it was a great performance. You know, the result very much flattered Carlisle. Come to the end of the game, Richie Wellen's interview. Now, this was slightly controversial. You know, because there was a lot of rumours that I was in the supporters club when it came out, and then there were a lot of rumours that the interview had been pulled off the official club website and then put back on within half an hour to an hour later. Now, you know, after a performance like that, I would have thought he would have sort of been quite bouncing, but it was a fairly sort of negative interview from him, because I think, you know, not so much around the team performance, but obviously the transfer window, he started talking about that, which had closed on the Thursday, I think it was, and the club's business. So I mean, let's talk about the transfer window itself for a second first. Darren, you know, three out, Thompson went to Barnet, Ed Turns went to Crewe, and Drinnen went to Swindon. We got the two youngsters in, Caden Edwards from Arsenal, and Dan Adu Ajay, I think, from Bournemouth. What did you think of the transfer? I mean, from what I read online, most people, I thought, seemed to be okay with it. But, I mean, what did you think personally?
Right up until that interview, I was happy with it. I'd listened to the Martin Ling interview previously.
Yeah.
I think it'd be hindsight on my part if I said I'd like to have had an experienced centre-forward in. I like the gamble of those guys.
I feel exactly the same. You know, I was the same. I mean, to be honest, after Richie's interview, I did think, has he got a point? I started thinking about it more. But as with, I think, most people that I'd read online, and as you've just said there, I actually thought it's not, you know, not a bad... I felt we were short at centre-back, which I think is another thing that Richie was saying.
Go back to Jaden Sweeney. Like, Richie likes, and as all managers like, they like certainty. And that's why you got the hump with Happ for a while, because what you were getting with people like Jaden and Happ, you were still getting that one mistake a game. And what managers want is they want the ratios. And that's why the youngsters, you don't get that with the youngsters, do you? They have to find their feet. They have to make mistakes. They have to learn. So that's why I think he likes slightly... He loves Hunt, for example.
Hunt's, he loves experience, doesn't he?
Yeah, and you can't blame managers for that. But what you don't get with experience sometimes, you don't get the unknown that you do get with youngsters. And sometimes, you know, Harry Kane, I think you mentioned earlier, was the perfect example.
Yeah, well, do you know, the thing that I thought with his interview was... He was talking about, you know, we've lost 500 games here. We need the experience. And let's be honest, probably the only player I felt wasn't good against Carlisle was one of our most experienced players, was Beckles, you know. I thought it was a dreadful first goal to concede by hitting it against the defender. I mean, you know, a lot of people around me were saying it was Brin and the clearance, and it wasn't a great clearance. But I thought, you know, maybe it's unlucky, maybe I'm being harsh, but I thought it was a poor clearance by Beckles into him. And to be fair, he had a couple of other shockers during the game. And I, every time Richie says this, I can't help but think, you know, we have these experienced players that make mistakes just as much as, you know, I know they add stuff to the dressing room, and I know there's other things to it.
But go back to what I just said, it's ratios.
Yeah, yeah.
That's Beckles' first poor game in a long
since
time.
He's come back, yeah, since he's come back
and
into the team.
Same with what Happ's now doing. Happ's consistent. And managers don't want that risk. And you can't, as I say, when I said about Harry Kane, what I meant was the unknown coming in.
Yeah,
that's what
yeah,
I mean.
I mean, as we'll talk about in a second, because Harry Kane had never played a game for anyone before he joined us, and that was in League One. Because in Richie's interview, what he said was, and this is what we mentioned, he said, you know, I don't like taking on players who've never played a match. That's what you do in League Two. You don't do that in League One, which, again, I really disagreed with, because Harry Kane for us was the perfect example of that.
But he doesn't want players learning on his watch.
Yeah, I understand that.
And he's trying to win something. He wants an experienced centre forward in, because he's got more chance of the guy understanding the game, because he's played 200-400 games.
Tony, what did you think of the transfer window?
I thought it went reasonably well. See, we've got Cooper in on the contract. I mean, we're all worried about him on disciplinary issues, but into the games that he has played to the finish, he did well as a loanee. And it's nice, I think, after, you know, we got over losing with 10 men to the best finance team in the division in the end, and I think we're pleased to have him back in the building. The young lads, I mean, in terms of the actions of the manager, they both got on the bench last night. None of them have seen any game time yet, which suggests that he is, in terms of his actions, he is a bit worried about giving them game time. But, I mean, the guy from Arsenal, he's a fair bit older than Kevin Campbell was before he came over. So I think with the fact that we've got so many games in February, he's got to give them a go at some point. But does he really want to?
It's almost a bit of fate there, getting a striker in from Arsenal in January and pushing up the table. Yeah. I mean, we all know the impact Kevin Campbell had. I know that was 30 years ago.
Wouldn't it be lovely if history repeated itself?
I know. I couldn't help but think that, because, I mean, I quite like the fact that we've got someone from Arsenal as well, because it's one of those teams, really, where we don't seem to have much of a relationship with or have had in the past. And, you know, I know they've obviously got a lot of good youngsters there as well, so it was quite good to see that. I mean, again, you know, when we sign a player, I always try and look and see what the opposition fans think. And for both players, really, and even for Ollie O'Neill, who's looked very, very good when I've seen him so far. You know, the fans are all a bit, you know, especially with Ollie O'Neill, I think Fulham are actually quite gutted to let him go, because he's gone permanent. But with the other two, they're, you know, from what I can read, both sets of fans seem quite, you know, they've scored a lot of goals in their under-21s team or whatever it is.
Well, I personally don't take any notice of the under that level. I really don't. But where I do agree with Richie is they have not played any games.
Yeah.
I think if you look at our January's, if you look at them 6 months later, or if you look at them at the time, we tend to think, oh, what are we doing? What are we playing at? I mean, if you even look back to 2 years ago, and we think, yeah, what, that was the last days of Kenny Jackett. What were we doing there? Well, we got Jordan Brown, funnily enough, in the middle of that alleged, you know, dreadful January we had. So you look at them, you got to look at it in 6 months' time and say, did it work, really? You can't tell at the time.
I mean, I was kind of hoping on Saturday, because was it Edwards made the bench, didn't he?
Yeah.
And obviously we brought Piggott on over him. Part of me in my head was thinking, is the reason he's not bringing this Edwards in is after he'd done the interview, was it to prove a point? Because I'm not happy with the transfer window. But again, you know, Piggott came on and there was two chances. It was the header, wasn't it? And the one where I think Shaq Ford or someone put Ollie O'Neill put the ball into him and he just completely missed it. I mean, I read online, I thought the header was the harder chance, but I read online someone said the other way round. Maybe they were a bit more difficult than they looked, those two chances. I mean, I'll be honest, he looked distraught coming off the pitch, Joe Piggott. I really did feel for him. But, you know, if we'd have had that youngster out there, maybe without that, you know, the experience was the one that missed it, the youngster might have finished it. I mean, who knows? You know, we don't know. But, you know, I felt, again, and we saw Joe come on last night, I mean, maybe we might start seeing him a bit more, because we had the news, obviously, that Dan Ajay's out for a while now. Certainly the season, they seem to be saying, but...
Yeah, once we saw the interview afterwards, we realised why he'd done it in the order he had. I mean, it made life a lot clearer, didn't it? For good or bad.
Yeah. Darren, those two Piggott chances, what did you think?
Yeah, I for me, the header was a harder chance. The ball was travelling quite a speed when it came to him. So the first one, I completely forgive him. The second one was an absolute car crash of a miss. He just completely caught the ball under his feet.
Standing foot, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so overall, I mean, Richie's interview at the end then, I must, you know... I say, we were in a supporters club, it was a hot topic when we were in there, everyone was, you know, let's have a listen to it, let's see. But I mean, I think my overriding, I mean, I'd had a few drinks, you know, and I was thinking, like, you know, how do these young players feel hearing him saying he didn't really want them here? And but I think the main thing I thought really was he probably should have waited till the next day to have that conversation. I think, you know, he sort of thought, you know, he maybe should have... He was frustrated, but that's not the ideal time to do it straight after a game. I mean, we'd won as well. This is the thing. Had we have lost, I probably could have understood it a bit more, but we'd actually won and looked good. So that was the odd thing for me, was that he chose to do it then. Sunday, the Outlook boys did an excellent interview with Nigel Travis, which we all listened to now. I mean, obviously, when they asked for questions for it, that was the main topic from everyone, pretty much. And he basically said, look, you know, we love Richie. It was just what he was just slightly frustrated, but we're all in this together. We're all, you know. And when Richie did his pre-match interview for Port Vale, he said pretty much the same thing, you know. You Southerners take things to heart too much, etc. So, I mean, you know, I think that's pretty much what it was, really. It was just a case of he probably shouldn't have vented his frustrations. He was in public. I think that was the message he said that he got from Nigel in the end.
I think Nigel's going to cut him a certain amount of slack when you think about how far we've come in the... still not 2 years since he joined us. And, you know, we've come from, you know, thinking about the National League to thinking about the Championship. And that's a hell of a change of mindset in 2 years, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Darren, it's great to have a manager, though, that has that sort of passion, I guess, as well, right?
I didn't like the interview. I've got to be honest and say that I felt Richie let himself down. I think the only one to come out any credit was Nigel. I think he came out with a lot of credit. Mm. I will credit Richie for being big enough to go on the next time and say he's been told off. I like that. But I hope he's learned from that. And I expected better of him. He's not a young manager anymore. He's managed three, four clubs now. So I thought it was, yeah, I just thought it was a car crash and an awful interview.
Yeah, I mean, I think apparently the reason it wasn't on the website was more technical issues or, you know, behind the scenes stuff. It wasn't anything too
bad. I've used that excuse once or twice myself.
Exactly, yeah. But, I mean, a couple of interesting points then from Nigel's interview. I mean, you know, yes, I think it was all agreed it was a bit of a storm in a teacup, but Richie's contract was mentioned, as it was, I think, when they did an interview with Richie, and we spoke about it with Matt Poulter as well. He didn't quite go as far, you know. He was along the lines of, we love Richie, we want him to stay, and we hope he's here for a long time. But for me, I would have thought there would be a lot more sort of, we're going to sit him down, we're going to offer him a contract. I think, is that the way it works more?
I think this focus would have been on the January transfer window. Mm. So I'm not too surprised that there hasn't been further talks about an extension. And if Richie carries on with the current form of the team, then I think it'll go up the agenda even further. And then we'll be looking over our shoulders. I think Blackburn are talking about looking for a new manager now. Their guy's going.
I haven't seen Richie's name linked
with it. He's going to be linked with these jobs.
Yeah, I mean, Nigel, in the interview, he did talk about succession planning at length.
Yeah, he did mention
that, you know, we're not naive. We have got plans. We have got names in mind if we did have to look for someone, even though we're not looking for someone.
The only thing I'd say there, Tony, is I don't quite buy that. And I'll tell you why I don't quite buy that. I think that's a little bit of PR and a little bit of telling us what we need to hear. And for this simple reason, you can only get the managers that are on the market generally. Unless you want to pay compensation, which I can't see Orient going down that road. So, for me, you have to react sometimes in business. And that's a reactional situation of a staff member leaving. You can't have succession plans, because those lists will be changing by the bloody hour, by the day. No, I'm not really buying that from Nigel.
Tony, he also started talking about a push for the playoffs, Nigel, because, you know, it was mentioned to him, obviously, the January transfer window's shut now, so, you know, what can you do to help that? And, you know, he pointed out along the lines of, you know, when we've got a midweek game, we go up the day before rather than the day of the game, you know, preparing the players in the right way, diets, that kind of thing. I mean, I suppose it's the best they can do now, right? I mean, the facilities available to them is, you know, without the transfer window available, we can't improve the team per se, but we can maybe try and get players back fitter and quicker and things like that.
Yeah, they've got slightly less players available now than they have done. I mean, I think there's been times in the last year or two where they've almost had too many players. And the fact they have got a focus, looking at the injuries to Adji and Sands and things like that, they are focusing on a group of about 18, 19 to get them through to the end of the season. So that's the way they're looking at things in terms of looking after the people they've got. I think that's what I took from Nigel's comments on that anyway.
Yeah. Okay, Darren, moving on to last night. Port Vale, I mean, we sort of said before, and I mentioned it, I mean, up to Saturday, I hadn't seen that Reading had been the poorest team I'd seen until I saw Carlisle. I think Port Vale probably took that last night, certainly on their second half performance. You know, I thought for the first half, 35 minutes, we were a much better team. Then they had the last 10 minutes of the first half, and I thought the second half, we pretty much, it was men versus boys, I thought we dominated, really. And again, it should have been more than 1-0. What were your thoughts on the game?
Just on the Reading, do you mean the Reading that we saw at our place?
Sorry, when we played them at home.
Because I thought at their place they were decent. But small point, but I thought you'd meant that. What did I think of last night? I think there wasn't a Leighton Orient fan either watching it or there that can't be heartened by that performance. I think that's a combination of a lot of work coming together. Go back to what you just said a minute ago about the preparation. That team know how they play. The exception, I think, was Shad Fouldball through to trying to get Moncur to use his legs. Virtually every pass, every ball, every position that they took up was spot on. It was almost, other than the goals, I would say it was almost a perfect performance.
And Brandon Cooper came in for Omar Beckles as well. He took a knock, I think he came off, didn't he, on the Carlisle game. And Richie had mentioned in his interview afterwards that he may just shuffle it. I mean, I'll be honest, I thought he'd shuffle it a bit more than that, Tony. I thought maybe we wouldn't see Moncur last night, but again, he started the game. And I thought he looked fairly decent.
Well, it's the old cliche of not changing your winning team. And if you're playing two games a week, which we are for the rest of the month, he probably, hopefully he will have to change your winning team. We'll carry on winning and he will have to come to that. But, Brandon Cooper did well last night, kept himself on the pitch, which is always helpful, and hopefully we can keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he grew into the game. Darren, the goal, I mean, the ball from Tom James through to El Mizzouni, I mean, he didn't even need to take a touch, El Mizzouni, he just finished it, didn't he, straight, his first touch, I mean.
It, for me as well, wasn't just the goal and the pass, we all know how good those were, but the build-up to it, the keeping the ball, the not trying to make a Hollywood pass. That was what I liked about it. Reminded me a little bit. Do you remember the goal at Salford last season?
Yeah.
Away. Mm. Just reminded me of that a little bit. Yeah. Just that epitomises where we are now as a club and a team. The way that Wellens has got them playing that style and system so well. The other clubs haven't got that consistency. One of the things I thought about Port Vale last night was they were like a bunch of strangers playing together. They didn't have that what we had. We had a lot of synergy.
It's strange. I mean, I was watching that second half, watching it. It was about 70, 75 minutes. And I was literally thinking, this is what I've seen so many teams do to us in the past. You know, we look like we can't string anything together. And we were dominating them. I was watching it and I was just thinking, just how good do we look here? I mean, it's just a shame for me that it was only 1-0, because I want to hit that positive goal difference as well. We're at zero at the moment. But, it's very unusual for me as an Orient fan, or us as Orient fans, I think, to just see us, just how, I mean, Port Vale were, they're probably what I'd class as a similar size club to us, and it was men versus boys.
I agree. And the other thing with Port Vale, there isn't, is it the quarter final or the semi final of the League Cup?
You mean the League Cup or the Football Trophy?
Football Trophy. Oh, yeah. Apologies, Football Trophy. Yeah, but they've clearly got some good players.
Yeah.
And there's something wrong with that club at the moment, isn't there, clearly?
Well, I mean, so this is it. They'd sacked their manager the day before. And, as soon as I heard that, the first thing I thought was, this is all we need now.
Normally the day after we do them, isn't it? Yeah,
but, it didn't seem to make much difference, Tony. I mean, I can't imagine they've been much better, like much worse than that.
I checked out the extended highlights on Leighton Orient today, and obviously you get the iFollow commentator there, and you had the neutral commentator mentioning that Richie Wellens liked to pass the ball as a player, and his team obviously liked to do the same thing. And when you're getting compliments like that from a neutral source, you feel like you're getting somewhere as a team. It certainly heartened me to hear that.
Yeah, I think what I think about here, Darren, as well, if you list those players that we've got out at the moment, obviously Beckles at the back wasn't there, but Jordan Graham, Dan Ajay, Max Sanders, I mean, to not even have them available to us, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but, if we've got these players for next season and we add to it as well, if we have left it slightly too late, which I suspect we probably have this season, but you never know, but I think we could really look at doing something good. I think if we can keep some of these players together and just add quality to it, and I think the transfer window kind of went the right way to doing that, because people like Thompson are now off the wage bill, if you like, Aaron Drinnen, and they were never going to play really much this season unless we had serious injuries, and they're not going to, weren't going to be here next year.
With all due respect to all three of the players that have left, they've all gone into League Two.
And
the fact that we made two permanent signings in the transfer window, I really like. You mentioned earlier, you touched on Ollie O'Neill. He does look the real deal.
Yeah, exactly.
It's early doors. I think for me, for us to make that late push for the playoffs, we have to have three things go in our favour. Number one, we have to keep this current form. Number two, we have to not get any more injuries. And number three, we have to rely on probably Stevenage, if I'm honest, bottling it. I just think that's too many improbabilities all colliding. It could happen, and I certainly think every Orient fan hopes it happens. But I just think that, like you, we've left it that little bit too late. Let's just enjoy what we're doing, though, and let's carry on seeing if hopefully we're wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange, because, I mean, this is Orient, so there's always going to be people to find something wrong. But, you know, it does feel like, you know, even going into the supporters' club, I mean, the mood around the whole ground, the stadium and the club has been phenomenal for 18 months now. But this season, when we've had a few of those little bad runs, I mean, you know, no one in the crowd at all has ever turned on the team yet. Well, there was the fella that started giving Richie abuse for Derby, and he had his hat thrown on the pitch, deservedly. I mean, I'd love to know what he thinks
He wasn't far away from me. And let's put it this way, I think he'd been on the light out of sherry and the vodka in one go.
But I mean, you know, it's been a great atmosphere for a while, and I think this is the thing, really. Is when these good times are, you know, we've all been Orient fans a long time, so you've almost got to make the most of it while it's here. And this is like this isn't just a one season ride at the moment. This is like an 18 months, maybe even 2 years, because things turned around when Richie came in.
I think, Tony, you said earlier, didn't you, that you've been an Orient fan probably the longest out of all of us, and how much you're enjoying it. And yeah, I think you're bang on. I think that's...
Well, yeah, I'm hoping for top two, because my daughter's getting married on playoff final day, so...
I think that's out,
and I'm up in Leicester, but yeah.
Okay, well,
that is exceptionally hopeful, but there we are.
Let's have a listen to what Richie said after the game.
Richie, thanks for joining us, and congratulations, your side worked hard tonight.
I think we worked hard. I don't think we worked that hard out of possession in the first half. There was too many times when the ball went forward over the midfield three, and they landed on the second ball and a little ricochet, then they could have got in, but we should be walking away winning that game 4-5. Ruel should have 3 or 4 himself. And in the end, we make a couple of bad decisions. We've hunted down the right, he should just put it down the channel. And obviously then Sol has a goal kick in the last minute, and he kicks it straight down the middle of the pitch to Ripley, who then launches it, because that's all they do. And we have to defend another corner where the keeper's coming in. So it's always terrific in coming for them corners. However, we don't really need to do that. We could have dominated the ball a little bit more than what we did. But I think there was only one team in it for the majority of the game.
The winner was a special one from Adjusel Mazzuni.
Yeah, we know that Chislett's a really good player, but we thought we could identify running off him. We didn't quite get it right in the first half. But I'm happy that side where Idris, he's made a run, he's played it inside, and then he's not stood still or retreated in the same line. He's actually run inside, got in a pocket and running in a gap, and the ball by TJ is a Premier League pass. We know he's capable of that, but it's an unbelievable ball.
As you say, there should have been more, denied by the woodwork, and some good saves from Conor Ripley.
Yeah, I thought he was the best player on the pitch, Conor Ripley. I know we had some really good performers, but some of the saves that he made, even that, the one-on-ones, sometimes you're waiting for a goalkeeper to go down early or kind of open his, but he stayed big. He delayed it as long as possible, and you know, we've got to be taking the chances, but you have to take it out. I thought he was exceptional tonight.
And so was Sol Brin in the closing stages.
Well, I don't think he had anything to do. It was just, in the 93rd minute, Sol, he's 21, is he 21, Sol? 21-year-old keeper. They've piled the box, and he's brave enough to come and take it and take the pressure off the team. I think we've done outstanding in replacing Lawrence Vigery with Sol, because Viggs was a massive part of our team last year, and we've gone out and we've given his third loan, where he was brilliant in League 2 this year, and he has been an exceptional part of our team.
How bad is the injury for Theo Archibald?
We don't know yet. He's far too early. I'm not sure. I'll leave that to Keats. So I wouldn't want to speculate anything. We don't think, touch wood, that it's anything too serious, but when he jarred his knee, so you never know.
How difficult was it to prepare for this game with Andy Crosby losing his job last night and this afternoon David Dunn leaving the club?
Do you know what? It was difficult anyway, because he played a back five. In the last two or three games, he played a back five. He played 4-4-2, he played 4-3-3. So it's always difficult anyway. So I think then it's important that you don't overcomplicate it. You trust the players to do certain things, which are the basics and our principles, but then you just give them two or three things, like running off their midfield. I'm pleased that the goal came from that. Every time we switch play, in the first half. You want to switch play by Ethan Galbraith coming inside, but then taking touch after touch after touch. And by the time it gets out to TJ, they've shifted across. And when we switched it quickly and we played one and two touches, then the gap started to appear in their midfield and we looked threatening too many times in the first half. We played it down one side, tried to play a channel ball because we wanted to get in races because we have athleticism at the top end of the pit. But all in all, I thought it was a difficult coming here on a Tuesday night to Stoke. Not many can do it.
It's a little cliche, that one. Stevenage lost. You closed the gap at the top. It's a fantastic one.
We just keep going, concentrating ourselves. You mentioned there that this club has lost its manager. And you know what it's like. Everybody starts texting you, why didn't you leave it one more game? And it's hard. This change of manager, he's done this. And all the text back is about us. It's about us. If we do the basics right, we've got good-footed players. It's a privilege to work with these young players and watch them learn and watch them grow every day and where they've come from. Again, we're finishing the game. You look at the game, look at our, you go through our team, Sol 21, Dan App, first season in League One, Jordan Brown, El Mazuna, first seasons in League One, young players, Ollie O'Neill, 21, Ruel, first season in League One, Shaq, 19. So to see him grow is, you know, it gives me a really good feeling, and it also excites me for the future because they're not only good players, athletic, technical players, but they want to listen, they want to get better.
These really are special times for the club, and it's a very different test on Saturday against Barnsley.
One of the most difficult tests in the league in terms of squad depth, in terms of talent. Listen, they're a player that the team that reached the playoffs last year, so and obviously I think the previous year was in the Championship, so they're one of them five or six clubs that can go and spend money on transfer fees, along with the Boltons and Peterboroughs and Derbys. So good test, but like I say, we're on a good run, and we'll just keep it going.
Omar Beckles and Sam Sanders, would they be available for that one?
We'll have to. I just didn't. Becks could have maybe have played. He wanted to be on the bench, but I just didn't want that temptation that if one of our centre backs go down after 10 minutes, then I'm looking round and I've got Beckles on the bench, then the temptation is to put him in. And I don't think he had that. I don't think we needed to take that risk. Sometimes you have to weigh up the probability and the percentage-wise whether it's worth the risk. And we've got 16, 17 games left. It just wasn't worth the risk. So Max Sanders, touch and go for Saturday, might make it. And again, we'll just have to see. We give Becks a day off. He'll have another day off tomorrow, making sure that he's an experienced player. He tells us when he wants to train and he manages his body the best way he knows.
Finally for me, Richie, over 200 made the journey.
Yeah, I was actually couldn't believe it when I walked out because I looked at that end and I thought, hell, how many have we brought on a Tuesday night? I couldn't believe it. And then he informed me that, you know, that when he started joining their pre-match song, I think it was an Elvis song, and he started singing along to us like, what's going on there? But then he informed me that the away supporters have been moved now, but no, terrific. I thought we gave them a really good performance. Gutted that we didn't get two or three more goals for them. But yeah, I mean, brilliant. And like I say, we're enjoying a really good run. We're enjoying some good times. The fact that we're going toe to toe with the Portsmouths, with the Boltons, with the Charltons, Port Vale, probably not as big as them, but difficult place to come, especially with the weather. Fair play to their ground staff and everyone and gotten the game on, because Burton's not too far away and obviously they've called off. So credit to the club. I hope they get a new manager in. I know Dave Flitcroft well, and we wish them all the best.
Thank you, Richie. Well done. Thank you.
We are so lucky to have Nigel Travis as our chairman. The way in which he calmly explained and closed in the issues following Saturday's interview with Richie Willans, a powerful example of proactive, value-based leadership. And we are so fortunate to have such a passionate and talented young manager. Richie, always looking forward, always challenging everyone at the club, including himself, always demanding improvement. It's that drive and relentless pursuit of excellence that has inspired, empowered and enabled the success that we are currently enjoying. Post-match, Richie is always honest, open and often very funny. And we are so lucky to have Martin Ling as our Director of Football. The quality of recruitment since the summer of 17, outstanding. We have a balanced squad of exciting young players and experienced professionals who lead by example. This season injuries will prevent the opportunity of seeing Leighton Orient's strongest side. I'm sure I'm not alone in being very excited by the prospect. For me, the most important aspect of this January transfer window was that we kept our regular first team players. I was especially concerned that other clubs would have been impressed by the quality of Idris Elmazouni. On the 1st of February, I waited up until midnight before happily settling, content in the knowledge that our creative and combative midfielder was staying in the 10. Idris is one of, if not the best player I have seen in League One this season. He was my man of the match against Carlisle. All he needed was to add goals to his game, and on a wet night in Stoke, he finally did that. A wonderful strike from an exceptional pass from the outstanding Tom James. Stevenage, losing at home to Reading, saw the O's close the gap and poor Port Vale slip into the relegation zone. These really are special times for our wonderful football club. It has been an incredible start to 2024, and we'll be looking to continue that magnificent one. Two tough matches coming up. It's going to be a very different test at Barnsley. The Tykes, currently fourth in the form table, which of course is headed by the mighty O's. Neil Collins' side have won 3 and lost 1 of their last 6 at Oakwell, and on Tuesday we welcome the Cobblers to E10. John Brady's Northampton have won 5 of the last 10 on the road, and they'll be looking to achieve another away day success. Finally, we are so lucky to have the Leighton Orient faithful. This season, it has been great to see so many younger supporters find their voice. Those who travelled to Vale Park on Tuesday night played their part in securing an important and very satisfying win.
Thank you much. We, just to confuse you there, we went straight into Victor's view. He wasn't still talking to himself to Richie. Chaps, Saturday, we've got Barnsley. For me, the best team I've seen this season. And I thought, actually, saying that, best team I've seen this season, but we were unlucky not to get the 3 points, I thought. We got the draw. But, you know, what you're thinking there, there could be some changes for this, Richie said again in his interview there, possibly. Theo came off. We don't know how bad it is. Hopefully it's nothing too serious. He didn't look too bad when he came off. But, Tony, tough place to go.
Yes, though, as you say, they did look impressive when they came. It was one of the better games you've seen down here this season. Two teams both trying to play. Barnsley, who became particularly stood out, not just for his goal that day, going wearing 8. He was one of the standout performers I think we've seen here this year. But obviously we're doing very well ourselves at the moment, so maybe we shouldn't worry too much about the other team too much.
Darren, you're going to the game?
Yes, I'm up there for that one. I think that's our toughest game for the remainder of the season.
I mean, I haven't seen, but I'm not sure what sort of... I think, actually, no, I did look earlier. They're about
they're in decent form. They've been up there all season.
I'm not looking past first place at the moment in the form table, so I haven't seen really.
I agree with you, they're decent.
Yeah.
I think Tony mentioned the goal they got at our place a second ago.
Yeah, Herbie Kane, yeah.
I take a point now, without a doubt.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange, really, because... I guess in this run, well, it's not true actually, because I was about to say the only form team we've played is Reading, and we got a point, but Bolton were, when we played them as well, they were top near the form table. They might have even possibly even been above us. But
I think home advantage, the crowd on that day, yeah. I thought our crowd were excellent on that day.
I think, let's be honest, I think pretty much all of us would take a point right now, when you look at it with that, but... okay, well, we're going to go into Roper's Rant, but I'm just going to read out a couple of messages from the supporters club to mention. Away travel for games for the end of the season. There's details for all games now available on the orientsupporters.org website under the away travel. Tuesday the 20th of February, there's an evening with Richie Wellens. Tickets available to members only to begin with. In person at the Northampton and Burton games. Further details are on the supporters club socials. And the Star Man Awards, 28th of April, Sunday. Last few tickets are left. £75 a head. Contact Linda on the loscevents@aol.com to book it. Let's listen to Roper's Rant.
The O's are winning. The EFL are behaving themselves. The referees we've had haven't been too bad. So what on earth do I rant about this week? Cost of living? The weather? Interview gate and the miniature storm in a teacup over Wellens interview post-match Carlisle? Nah. Following Nigel Travis on Orient Outlook and the 1-0 win at Vale Park, even that's not worth me of me venting my spleen over. So how do I keep you all amused and or raise a discussion point or two for the next 5 minutes? Well, let's try. In the upcoming issue of Pandemonium Fanzine, due out next Tuesday, might I add, versus Northampton and well worthy of a quid, even if I'm slightly biased, we are carrying an article called The Real Deal, and it focuses on a few older fans' views as to whether Leighton Orient really are going places. Does it feel real? And the hurdles we may have to overcome in a bid for a glorious return to second-tier football, something we haven't seen for over 40 years. Upon asking several supporters, all aged approximately 50 or over, they had very similar answers. Yes, it's very exciting. Yes, it feels far more realistic than in, say, the early 90s under Peter Eustace, or in 13-14 under Russell Slade, although no disrespect to the team on that occasion, who were brilliant. But yet, things like attendances, income, investment and the ground are all stumbling blocks. Some far greater than others, of course. In my humble opinion, attendances are not a major factor. Look at Luton and Bournemouth. Both have hit the big time on capacities not much more than us. Yes, of course, an increased capacity brings in extra revenue, but perhaps akin to a big FA Cup game, a tight-knit ground bombed out with 8,000 Orient fans could easily just as be an advantage as, say, having a 15,000 horrible wraparound bog-standard stadium. It's the next three, of course, that hold far more sway. Income and investment go hand in hand. This year we upped our playing budget by approximately £1 million. Now, it's not all about the money, of course, but if we were by some miracle to hit the playoffs this year and get promoted, then our budget of approximately £4 million against the rest of the Championship division would be like comparing David to three Goliaths, let alone one. And while some fans don't like the tagline Little Leighton Orient, it could have been more apt, as we would then attempt to hold court with clubs such as West Brom, Leeds and Sunderland, all of whom either have or all massive grounds, massive incomes and massive budgets. It was interesting that Nigel said on the Orient Outlook podcast that we had looked at next year and that if we were by some miracle promoted, we think we could be competitive on a similar budget. I love Nigel, I love his optimism, and I thank him like so many of us do for his buying and repairing of the club. But come on, Nigel, competitive in the crazy league on £4 million? If we even finish 21st on goal difference by one, then it's a modern day miracle that even George Moncur, Omar Beckles and Alan Comfort couldn't conjure up between them. To that point, and again going hand in hand with the ground, Nigel also announced that there will be some news on investment and ground plans, possibly both short term at Brisbane Road and longer term at a fans forum at the club next Monday, when yours truly will be there with representatives of other fan groups, podcasts and the like. So when you bundle all this together, there can be no doubt we are at a very important point in the club's history. Perhaps the most important for many years, in fact. The product on the pitch continues to flourish, and oh boy, should we all be enjoying the continuing roller coaster ride that Wellands & Co. has us on. I should think the board are obviously discussing the possible statue for Wellands alongside the great Laurie Cunningham in Coronation Gardens. New sponsors, talk of new investment, talk of longer term plans for training grounds and home stadiums. This is not just an important time, but one that I and others believe is hugely exciting, and perhaps the most exciting since when? Well, you might have to go back to a certain spring in 77-78, when we weren't too far away from a walk down Wembley Way. But even then, that was only really exciting because of the football on the pitch, rather than possible plans off the pitch to help accommodate a flourishing team possibly capable of giving us the reason to dare to dream about Championship football within the next 18 months or so. So what part do we as fans have to play? Yes, no doubt the club would like us to buy that extra pint or a burger to help income. And surely the very least we can do, though, as I said last week, is to use what tickets you have to be at the ground on either Saturday or Tuesday and join in with a bit of vocal support for the lads. Let's face it, as the rather catchy song goes, we have been, are now, and hopefully in the future, doing exactly what we do here every Wednesday, and put it on one hell of a show. Enjoy the ride, Orient fans, and up the mighty O's.
Thank you, Matt. Chaps, one of the things I was just mentioning there off mic was the fact that, and Nigel mentioned this in his interview on Sunday, the running that we've got coming up now, I mean, Darren, you just said this before when you were talking about Barnsley, our hardest game left of the season, really, is the words you used. As Nigel mentioned, it's quite a favourable running, or, you know, what have we got left? I mean, 17, 18 games or whatever it is. You know, with a lot of the teams we're playing, I mean, they're lower half. I mean, the thing is, as we're moving up the table, obviously teams are going below us now. So, but it's looking like quite a favourable run. It could have been a lot worse, really. I mean, as you say, Barnsley away.
I personally didn't agree with Nigel on that, and I've looked at it, and I think it's very mixed. So we've got to play Oxford away, Stevenage away, Barnsley away, all above us. Blackpool at home, above us. Then we have a run of fixtures, within the fixtures we've got left, we then have people like Northampton at home, Bristol Rovers at home, around us.
But I suppose his point is the form we're in, and the fact that we're, you know, I mean, I've got to be honest, if Northampton to me is a game we should win at home, Bristol Rovers, you know, they've been a bit of a mixed bag this season. I still look at a game like Stevenage, even though our record against them and Evans in particular is rotten, as a game that we could easily get something out of. I mean, I know traditionally we don't seem to do anything against these teams, but, you know, I did, when he said that, I hadn't really thought about it, but I found myself agreeing. I don't know what you think, Tony.
I think classically you want to try, towards the end of the season, you want to be playing teams that hopefully haven't got too much on them, maybe mid-table rather than people right at the top and people down at the bottom. And I think inevitably you just get a mix of them all. So, no, I'm with Darren on that one. I think it's a bit too simplistic a way to look at it. You've got to take each game as it comes.
Yeah, I mean, I guess what we can hope for is that a lot of these teams, because, you know, I think Carlisle, for me, are almost shoo-ins to go down. They've spent their money now, unless possibly, I hope they don't, but I think they'll probably replace their manager at some point soon. But other than that, you know, Darren, you were just saying Fleetwood have won their last two games, and that's come out of nowhere, really.
Yeah, and then you say about Northampton, they've had something like one defeat in about the last nine. I don't think that's an easy game.
No, I mean, it's not, but if I looked at that game, though, us at home, I would always pick us to win it, but you're right, yeah.
Bristol Rovers, you never know what's going to, at the moment. They've had a very up-and-down season-wise. Burton are down there now, so they need something. That's our next home game.
So they went on a similar run to us, didn't they? When we started looking good, they started inching away, and they've kind of dropped back down, and they've got a few new players. I mean,
they've got a few games in hand because they were another one with waterlogged pitch problem, weren't they? So, I think, like Tony just said, the fact of the matter is that the teams we've got to play, Fleetwood have got to come to our place. And 2 weeks ago, you're going, yeah, we'll get 3 points there. Now, after winning away, Exeter have still got to come to our place. They're down.
They picked up a good result last night. As Peterborough,
well, I think the sending off turned that game. I don't think they'd have won that otherwise.
Yeah. Okay, well, we've got 5 minutes left, and there was just something I wanted to go through, because we're at the end of January now. The players are all in. The players have gone who needed to go. A player of the season so far. Tony, what are your thoughts on who would be the best player so far for us?
I suppose I've got two thoughts in my head. I mean, the first one's a fairly predictable one. It's Elmiz. Continued excellence, doesn't seem to get injured, plays there all the time, knits the team together. But the new face that's coming is Ethan Galbraith. I mean, he's been sensational the last few games, as far as I can see. And, you know, come the end of the season, a few more games, he might nick it for me. But they're the two faces I'm looking at anyway.
Darren?
Yeah, I'm with Tony on Elwes. You can't really say that the guy's had... I think they had a couple of games where he wasn't quite at it.
Probably not his best, actually, at Carlisle game.
Yeah, I think he's done a couple better of games, Tony, not more. The other one, I'm very, very happy with Solbrin.
So that would have been my shout, Solbrin, yeah. I mean, for me, you know, I think up to about October or so, Solbrin and Brandon Cooper were the two standouts for me. And then Brandon Cooper seemed to lose his mind in a few matches and, you know, very quickly sort of disappeared. I mean, he came back in last night, and I actually thought it took him a little while to settle last night, actually. But Solbrin, for me, has been outstanding. I mean, I don't like to take anything away from anyone. For me, it would have been Solbrin or Jordan Brown. They're the two, I think,
Jordan Brown's a good shout. Solbrin's side against Bolton the other Saturday.
I mean, I've got to be honest. I mean, Elmiz... I actually wouldn't have him in my top three, I don't think, because I think he's only really in the last kind of month started coming into it for me. I mean, don't get me wrong, I do think he's been consistent and fairly good, But I guess I've still got in my head how, just how amazing he was last year. I think he's, you know, he's settling now. And then last night I thought he was the best player on the pitch. And I think against Bolton it was similar as well. But I'd say it's only in the last month or so for me that he's kind of pushed himself up there a
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, he's a defender's dream because you can always kick him the ball when he'll keep it. It's as simple as that. You know, he's always available.
Richie said, didn't he, in his interview, that like League One wise now, there's players that are proving they're comfortable, that have played, never played in League One. Dan Happ,
he listed them, didn't he? Yeah.
And for me, if Dan Happ hadn't had that sort of dodgy start to the season, and Beckles that dodgy start as well, they're not far away from being in that list, are they, really?
Yeah, I mean, Dan Happ, for me, again, would probably be a muscle.
Galbraith, I agree with as well. Galbraith, yeah. I think.
But again, I mean, I love Galbraith. He's the sort of player that I could just from the first few times I saw him, I knew that this is going to be a player of mine as a favourite. But he was in and out of the team for a bit, wasn't he? He was playing a lot in that good run in October, and then Richie kind of sort of took him out of the team. I think Matt Howard mentioned some point it was almost to protect him, and then that's when our form sort of dropped for me. And until he sort of come back in, and he's in that unusual position of playing right back. Last night he was at the number 10 again, then he went out onto the right wing. I mean, he's great, but you know, we were missing him for quite a while.
Yeah, I think he was the one person that stood out when I looked at the Colchester game at the pre-season. He came on and played second half, and he stood out a mile, and he stood out a mile for me ever since, to be honest.
Obviously, the elephant in the room is Dan O'Guy's injury. If that hadn't have happened, I think you'd have been a shoo-in by then.
Yeah, well, you could have said the same for Jordan Graham probably as well, actually, because the way he started it, this is the thing. We're missing two players, and they've both played kind of a month to 6 weeks each, and they're both, probably mention them as our players of the season.
We've never had them on the pitch, have we, the pair of them?
Not together, no. I mean, that's the dream for next season, I think, for me.
Mouth-watering.
It is, yeah. You know, and I think, you know,
and like you say, get the business done well in the summer.
I mean, that's what I mean.
The club is moving in such a positive, healthy direction. Like, probably none of us have witnessed in our lives the positivity around the club, the record, the sellouts every week, the stuff that's going on with the recruitment now, with players like Ollie O'Neill and Galbraith and young, really good players that I think will have future transfer value.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great place to be at the moment. So we've not got long left now, so just very quickly, Barnsley on Saturday. Tony, predictions?
I'll go for 1-1.
1-1. Darren?
0-0.
I think I'm going to go for 1-1 as well. I mean, I've just got a feeling that we'll get something, but I thought the same at Portsmouth, so who knows. But that's it for tonight. Thank you very much for listening. We've kept an eye on the weather for Barnsley on Saturday. It looks like it should be okay. We were worried at one point there might be a bit of rain, but it should be all good. So thank you for listening, everyone. Good night and up the O's.
We're not a city, we're not a town, we're the only one of us around, and you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we'll lay an Orion from E10. Lay an Orion from E10. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing it loud. We were formed in 1881, clans in Oregon and so begun the old story and on it runs. We're like an Orion from E10. Whatever challenge has come our way, the only faithful are here to stay. We will live to fight another day. We're like an Orion from E10. Like an Orion from E10. This is our club and we are proud. So sing it up and sing it loud. We're not a city, we're not a town, we're the only one of us around. So you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer all those on who wear the vest.
On the hour, across Brentwood and Billericay, this is Phoenix FM News.